Honey, I blew up the business.
Welcome to the podcast. We have Jodie Rogers here today, dialing in from sunny Spain.
Yeah, hot and sweaty Spain, but good to be here.
Hot and sweaty. Well, I'm pleased to hear it's hot where you are, because it's a bit wintry here, but it is the UK and it is summer. But I'm very excited to have Jodie here. She's I think it's going to be of great benefit to me personally, and I don't really care about you, audience, because I'm going to learn a lot from her today. She's a leadership and human behavior expert in mental fitness. And there's a really great quote, or a line she uses on her LinkedIn, which I'm going to quote back to you, but it says she's been spent years shaking and waking people up to their limiting beliefs, the thinking traps in their minds, and the emotional patterns playing out in their businesses. And funnily enough, I read that and I was like, whoa, that was me. Back in 2017, when I blew my business up. She's the founder and MD at a company called Symbio, which provides various things, but helps companies, the biggest companies in the world, like Unilever, Coca-Cola, and L'Oreal, improve mental fitness and business performance. And she's been doing that for over 8 years. She's an international speaker, podcaster, and Amazon best-selling author of an incredible book, which I'm going to recommend because it is really good, called The Hidden Edge: Why Mental Fitness is the Only Advantage That Matters in Business. And so I was really keen to speak to Jodie because this podcast is all about when things go wrong. And like I said, when things blew up for me, a lot of the issues that she lists out, she addresses, were the things that were undermining me at that point, although I didn't realize it. So before we kick off, I'm just going to remind everybody, this podcast is brought to you by The Tech Department, which is the company I blew up. But I did bring it around. We saved the business and it's back stronger than ever and actually is having a very good year. But we want to just encourage you, because the mission is to help entrepreneurs like you to not do what I did back in 2017. So if you like the podcast, you like what we're doing, please rate us on Apple Podcasts particularly, but share it with your friends and help spread the word and help us achieve our mission of helping entrepreneurs. So let's get into it. So this book's brilliant and the whole theme of mental fitness is brilliant. But I'm curious, like you wrote this book through the pandemic. So how was the how's your lockdown experience, Jodie?
Well, if you want to start the podcast with lots of expletives, let's just say it was challenging. I think, look, it was for everybody, wasn't it? And everybody has their own personal story. My husband's income disappeared overnight. He was running a number of Airbnbs. And of course, there's no tourism. I had a two-year-old and a four-year-old at the time, and we were in the first floor apartments in the old town of Valencia. And for anybody that can imagine, like, old cobbly streets, when you're on the first floor, you don't get any light. And in Spain, we were very properly locked in. My kids were not allowed outside the front door for 45 days. And we had helicopters in the sky. The police were, and the army were on the streets. And you got fined if you were more than 300 meters away from your home. And my business, like it, most of our businesses just went on silence. And, you know, all of those were already challenging enough, I think. But in the middle of that, my dad had been diagnosed with cancer January 9th. And he passed away in May 2020, and I wasn't able to get back to Ireland to be with him. So that was obviously the worst of it all, and everything that came alongside that. So, yeah, challenging is the PC word that I will use.
Don't be PC. Let's just call it like it is.
It's a shit show. That's what it was, Dan. It was a shit show.
So, all right, so let's get back here. So in 2019, you're all kind of geared up and you've got this successful business and you're doing work with big companies and you fly all over the world and you're living in Valencia and it's all looking gravy. And you think, I know, I'm going to write a book. And as an expert in mental fitness. But then you sort of, the New Year's Day 2020, we start edging into 2020, suddenly this whole set of circumstances on almost every level, professionally and personally, lands on your desk in that first 6 months of the year. So looking back now, can you sort of, and you're writing this book about mental fitness. So what was going through your mind at that time as you've got this sort of stuff like coming at you like in thick swathes whilst formulating your thoughts about mental fitness? How did that work out?
Well, so the chronology, interestingly, is slightly different, which is I actually hadn't planned on writing a book. And it was the pandemic, as awful as it was, there's nothing like trauma, I think, to sharpen the mind or to cloud the mind, right? And there's we have different experiences and we also have some choices in there. So I actually, the world went quiet. My business went quiet. There was all sorts emotionally going on. I also had a team to support and no income, no clients and all of those things. But I actually, I had crystal clarity on this is the moment that I need to double down on mental fitness. Historically, I'd always had to Trojan horse this topic into business because it's too soft or emotional, or, you know, we're too senior, we don't need this, or we've done this, all of the nonsense that you get. And I thought to myself, no, actually, the door's open. People are listening, still slightly deaf, but listening. And this is what the world needs right now. Not everybody believed me that this is what the world needs. So I had to like bang my drum and fight for it. And that's where, actually, that's when I got really passionate about, at the moment, it's corporates with money that are able to afford what we do. How do we actually democratize this? How do we get this out as quickly as possible to as many people as possible? And the most affordable way that I could think of was through a book. Now, that's kind of insane when I literally have a 2-year-old and nappies running around banging on the door and a 4-year-old and what clients we do have and what projects we do have. I'm trying to do in between looking after my family and supporting my family home in Ireland as well with all of what was going on there. That is not the time to decide to write a book. It's not the time, but it absolutely was the time, actually. So massive gratitude to my husband for acknowledging that it was something that I needed to do. And it was probably part of my own therapy and processing as well, actually. That I barely remember writing that book. It honestly was like a download. It was also a culmination of years of talking about the topic, workshops, courses, all of the things. And it was really just a transformation into a different type of format. And actually, I also had limiting beliefs going into it because I don't think I'm a writer. I'm a speaker. And so I'd find a hack, which was I'm going to talk my book and then some clever editor is going to make it better and write it. And interestingly, I got quite frustrated with that quite early on because I'd realized when you talk and people ask you questions, you defend yourself and the ego gets in the way. And I actually challenged myself and went, you need the creative process of the book writing and like being with yourself and with your thoughts and challenging your thoughts. And is that what I really mean? And is that true? And let me just get this book and what's that talk and Google and really get clear on this. So even the writing process, I think was therapy for me and also a personal journey as well.
Yeah, it's just really interesting. What I'm curious about is this confluence of events sort of happening on the book. I think the book's sort of emerging out of them. And is there a particular moment in the middle of all that where it was kind of, you really having to lean on your skills, experience, learning, et cetera? I mean, was there a particular moment where you look back now as the sort of moment in time where you thought, right, this is what's going down? And what tools did you use to sort of deal with that?
Well, I would say up until... I've had a pretty good life, right? I haven't had the normal level of challenges, and those first 6 months were some of the most difficult of my life. So prior to this, I think I had conceptually understood all of these things and you know, from my I have a degree in psychology and interpersonal communications, all of these different modalities that I'd learned and picked up and fascinated by neuropsychology and so intellectually I understood these and was applying them to my life, but had never really been at the coal face, staring the beast in the eyes. And that's definitely what it felt like. It just felt like, okay, put your money where your mouth is. Let's see if this actually works. So I had to do a lot of self-work because, you know, there's the... What I'll say is death is not like the movies, just like love isn't like the movies. And it's different for everybody. And in a pandemic, you of course, it brings so many layers and complexities. And, you know, my dad was a typical Irish man who had a simple life and liked to go to the bar for his Guinness. And this was the first time in his 73 years of life that he wasn't allowed to do that. And we were telling him that it was that you're not allowed and you're not allowed out. And why would he believe that? He actually thought that we'd made it up. And we were just trying to stop him from going to the pub. So there was this whole other layer of how do you explain a pandemic to a dying man who just wants his last bit of freedom? And not being able to obviously be there. But then when he passed, my twin brother is a wildlife cameraman, and he, you know, at those times you weren't even allowed funeral. It was coffin straight to the grave, and you were allowed four people there. And so my twin brother ended up doing video WhatsApp call for my dad's funeral, and I'm laughing, and I know that arguably you shouldn't laugh, but that's what got us through it. You know, gallows humor. Me and my brothers would get on Zoom each night and we'd talk about the events of the day and the challenges and the fact that he was fighting with the nurse and all of the rest and trying to blackmail the priest and all sorts of very funny things. He got his last rites and convinced the priest to let him knock it back with some Guinness. I mean, who does that? It's crazy, you know. And so I'm at the other side. I'm in Spain. I've had to really make a decision about, am I going to like try and get to Ireland? And if I go to Ireland, will I get back? And actually, at the time, we had the most COVID numbers in Spain. So will I bring COVID to a dying man or to my mother? And all of these complexities. And in the end, as a family, we'd kind of agreed that there was just too many risks and it wasn't worth that fight because I might never have got past France. And even that's a reckoning and continues to be a reckoning because I made a decision and I now have to live with that decision. And you know, you have good days and bad days about what happened. You tell yourself good stories and bad stories. You always get a slightly different nuance. And so I have to practice and use those tools often and regularly for small things and big things. And I use the word practice deliberately because it absolutely is a practice. It's ongoing and there's times that you need it more than other times.
So could you give us an example of, you talked about the practice and the tools and big and small sort of things you worked on, but like an example at the time where you saw yourself using some of the tools that you have in the book?
Yeah. So there's a couple of different ones. And just as you asked me, an image of myself and came up in my head, which is the silent scream. So when you are under acute stress, and we know the signs when the heart is palpitating, the eye is dilating, your body is generally preparing for fight or flight. So there's a physiological response. There's cortisol going through your body, adrenaline going through your body. And what people don't often know about stress is that it's a cycle. And we generally try and stop the cycle. And that might be by, you know, breathing, which is effective, and talking ourselves out of doing something irrational. But that doesn't always work. We need to sometimes beat physiology with physiology, and we need to complete the cycle. And so a really simple tool that I use with my children, which I've taught to CEOs and execs all over the world, is a silent screen. And what that is, so generally, if you're in a day-to-day situation, you might find yourself in a meeting where someone is just banging on, disagreeing with you, talking over you, whatever it might be, and you get, you know, irate and frustrated. Now, the temptation is to leave and just run around the building. Not necessarily a good idea. Everybody starts asking questions. Or to lean over and grab the person, kick the person under the table. Not good for your career either. And actually, if you take yourself out of the situation, excuse yourself, go to the bathroom, find somewhere private to go, the silent scream is you kind of bend your legs as if you're doing the haka or you're about to catch a rugby ball. You tense your arms and you take a big, deep breath. And you know, the reason why it's a silent scream is mainly so that we don't want you to do it properly and then someone calls the police. Where you take in a big deep breath, and as you expel that air, you can hear a little bit, you tense every muscle in your body. And really what you're telling your body is you have had the fight, or you've had the run, or you've done the thing that you need to do. And it allows adrenaline and cortisol to dissipate and for you to regain control of your heart and your breathing and your prefrontal cortex, which is where rationale and reason live. And I did the silent scream many times, and sometimes I did it on the roof of our building where it was not silent because I just needed to get it out.
That's really interesting. The physical part of your emotional well-being, your mental health, and this sort of the triangulation of all that stuff. And actually, something I've been more aware of just personally, day-to-day running a business, and that kind of your adrenaline starts going because of things that aren't going well or as you would have expected. And the physical release or essentially got the closing the loop. I don't have that kind of visualization. You start, the squirt of adrenaline kicks in and you get that cortisol going, but where does it go? And if it's just building up and building up and building up, and the physical release of that, that's really interesting. So you see, you're in this situation where you don't have any control. You've had your life has been imposed, or the circumstances in that moment have been imposed on you. Business, professional, family, the health, the relationship with your father, the circumstances around that has been imposed on you, that sort of lack of control. And that's something I think that I find challenging, just within my own life when I don't have a lot of control. But when you've got it externally imposed on you, that must have been very challenging, again, particularly in your circumstances. What tools have you got or that help with that kind of situation, or help you with that kind of situation?
So I think that, well, we know that stress is in part related to our perception of our ability to handle whatever challenge is in front of us and our sense of control over it. And where we go wrong is where we get fixated on things that are out of our control, and we overthink and worry. It affects our sleep, et cetera, et cetera. And I think one of the most simple but also powerful things that we can do is actually get clarity on what we have control over, what we have influence over, and what we have neither over. So I do this regularly for myself as well, which is just write a list of what are the things that are stressing you out, what are the things that are creating worry, that are keeping you awake, et cetera, et cetera. But then map them out on a matrix of control and influence. So top right, you have control and influence over. Bottom right, you have no control, but you do have influence. And then bottom left, you don't have control and you don't have influence. And first of all, get it all out of your head is really helpful, because part of the problem is when it just swims around in your head. Then mapping it out and taking a step back and going, do I actually have control over that thing? Because sometimes we think we do, and actually we don't. And it's the realization that you don't have control over it, especially other people, behaviors, pandemics, what governments decide, the economic situation. We don't have any control. We usually don't have any influence either. So acknowledging where you have control, and then deciding, well, what can I do about those things that I have more power over, right? So we might get upset about our health. Do you have control over it? Yeah, you've got more control than most of us are willing to admit. And that's the other part then. Sometimes we think we don't have control over things that we actually do. So really getting clarity on that, coming up with a plan for the things that you do have control over. And then also coming up with a plan for what you can influence, but acknowledging that that's a one-step plan. Do the influencing, let go, because you don't have control. And then the other stuff we need to meditate over. It was no real revelation, but it was still somehow surprising to me that when my anxiety levels were increasing through the pandemic, I finally realized there was a direct correlation with my media consumption. And so I spoke to my husband and we'd agreed, because I'm highly empathetic, and that's good, and it's also quite bad, to be honest. So we decided that he was going to be the newsreader. I wasn't going to do it, and he would just let me know anything that I needed to know. But other than that, I was going to stay away from the media because it was having a direct impact on my sleep. So making some decisions about what are the things that are negatively impacting you, and all that's happening is you are losing and your experience of life is being negatively impacted, then you need to switch that up and do something different.
It's an interesting point. I did something very similar very early on. I guess prior to lockdown, I was tuning out the news, but very much through lockdown, because I thought, well, really, their business model is not my mental well-being, you know? And
yes.
So, you know, they want to keep me all pumped up with fear. So I'm checking the, Twitter feed, as it were. And it's funny, it came up actually recently with some people. They're like, I just don't do it. You know, just don't have it in your head. It's like, and if I need to know, someone will tell me. Do you know what I mean? And yeah, so you kind of can take control in small ways there and sort of start to parse that out and actually articulate the thing that's doing your head in. And then give some sort of assessment about, okay, what is this? And can I actually influence this or not? And so the act of writing it down itself, you think, is a healthy thing to do?
Writing it down and then labeling it. Is it something I have control over or not? Do I have influence over it or not? And do I have neither? And then when you have it in those clusters and in those parts of the matrix, then it's clear, this is where I can take action. This is, I can only influence here, and I have to let go. And here, there's nothing that I can do directly to change the situation. So how do I change my relationship with the situation instead?
Interesting. So you're not only a kind of expert in the field, you're an entrepreneur in your own right, and our audience are entrepreneurs. And so what was the thing, and looking back now after the pandemic, lockdown sort of easing off now, the thing as an entrepreneur that you most used as a leader, an entrepreneur, again, over and above the family member and daughter and mother and wife and what have you. So but in that role as entrepreneur, what are the key tools you were using or found yourself going back to?
I would say, so two things. One, again, very simple. And I think this is a big lesson in life, that often the answers, well, it's Occam's razor, isn't it? The most simple thing is often the most powerful thing. So it was definitely, it's very easy. It depends on your own stress response, but most people, and myself included, fall into detail when stressed. And operational, executional, you get lost in the busyness to avoid the bigger, scarier things that you need to deal with. And so we have a very simple tool that we use every week in our team, which is after our team meeting, we ask, what are the three most important things that we're each going to focus on this week? And then each day, what are the three things I'm going to do today to help me make those three things happen? And on a Friday checkout, did they happen? Did they not? And if they didn't, what's the obstacle and how do we remove it for next week? And so that we spend our, it depends where you are in your entrepreneurial journey, but we often spend a lot of time in the trenches, which is what operations, right, at the coalface. And actually, as leader and founder, we need to be in the helicopter as much as possible. And so wherever, and most people think that means 5 days, you know, strategic planning. And yes, it does also mean that. But what are those micro moments that can get you in the helicopter and give you clarity of direction and what you need to do? And so in that time, we had lots of different things and projects. There were things that we could keep ourselves busy with. And my team were kind of going down the rabbit hole, or we need to redesign this and that. And I was like, drop everything. It's all about mental fitness. I wanted to create a mental fitness course, which we did do in the lockdown, which was completely illegal because I had to cycle somewhere and I wasn't allowed out. And I filmed it in the lockdown, where there's literally perfect time for filming, no cars, no construction, no noise whatsoever. And my team at the time were like, no, we don't have time for this. We need to do this other thing. I'm like, no, 100%. It's about, so being able to bring clarity to your team, I think, is also really important, and get yourself and get your team in the helicopter as frequently as possible in micro moments is how you stay kind of focused on your vision and where you need to go.
Interesting. So yeah, so it's kind of a nice little check-in tool there each day and week.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, mental fitness underpins everything we do, but where we spend our time is with leaders on some of the world's biggest brands and some of the biggest companies across a myriad of different industries, running leadership workshops, team workshops, and capability training sessions. So we are privy to the insides of lots of different businesses as well. And I would say the three things that we've seen businesses and leaders within them struggle with the most in the last 2 years is prioritization. We don't want to prioritize because we'd rather bet on all of the horses because the future is so uncertain. That kills your team and kills your focus. Strategy is as much about what you don't do as it is about what you do, but I feel like nobody seems to know that. Also this idea of getting in the helicopter because we think that we're needed in the trenches, and actually that's where our comfort zone is, and it's hard to pull yourself into the helicopter. It's painful, but as soon as you're there, you realize it's the only place that you're supposed to be. And I can't remember the third point, but that's only because one and two were so good.
Exactly that. So yeah, it's just really good. I think, again, this idea of focus is particularly difficult. Anyway, the best of times, but getting to that, particularly in times of stress, when you have that fight flight thing, and definitely something I can relate to. I remember 2020 being it was a big rough and tumble year for us, and we actually changed a lot in our business over that last 2 years, and have now achieved a lot greater focus than we had. But it was kind of like without the kick up the backside that the pandemic gave us, I'm not sure we would have got through to that kind of level. And it was almost a survival strategy because there was so much to do. I kind of was like, I can't think about all this stuff. I need to just reduce everything because my brain's going to blow up. Going back to kind of mental health and what have you.
Just as you were talking there, Dan, what I was thinking was, what is the one thing that stayed me well and subsequently my business during the pandemic? And this is going to sound weird, but it was having, this is going to sound very strange given that all the mental fitness stuff, but it was having a pessimistic outlook. What do I mean by that? I mean, most people went into the pandemic going, okay, we're going to ride this out 4 weeks, 12 weeks max. I didn't. I thought 2023 is the earliest that any sense of normality is going to come back. And that was massively liberating. Because I immediately let go of the past and the old way. And we're flying around the world doing workshops, right? And you literally cannot do that. So instead of waiting, and a number of my business buddies did wait, instead of waiting, I asked myself, okay, in a world where we don't go back to normal till 2023, what does learning and development look like? What does leadership look like? I said, well, the future is online. And actually, what we really need right now, if this opens up, countries are going to open up first, but international travel won't. So we need facilitators and trainers on the ground that can speak local language. And we need an army of mental fitness experts out there. And so that's when I put a call out to anybody who wanted to be part of our associate network. We were going to do free training on mental fitness. And so we trained up in January 2021, we trained up 18 associate facilitators around the world that are still working with us today. And so I think sometimes thinking worst case scenario can be quite liberating. And here we are in 2022 and we are actually traveling again. But we reshaped a lot of what we do prepared for worst case scenario. And I think that meant we psychologically weathered the storm really well because we moved in the change curve. We moved into acceptance very quickly and then into innovation and creation.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, the acceptance thing and seeing it for what embracing reality as it really was rather than what you hoped it would be. You know, I remember at the time we went fully remote in lockdown because we were all, our lease was up in the July. So we just didn't renew the lease and we stayed fully remote. But at the time, people were saying, oh, it'll be, you know, back by Christmas. And I remember thinking, this, there's no chance. Like, so it was interesting how, like, I guess a framing of the information and an acceptance of the information and sort of embracing that allowed us anyway to sort of more quickly make some good decisions.
Yeah. We're exposed to thousands of people around the world every week because we're running webinars, we're running workshops across industries, across functions, across generations. And I can tell you the people that suffered the most, again, it sounds weird, were the optimists who were going, in 2 weeks' time, it will all be fine. Because they held their breath and they waited. And then each time we didn't go back to normal, they had to go through the emotional disappointment again. So, and I like your term there because I think it really is about accepting reality. That's it. It's not about being pessimistic or optimistic. What is the situation? I asked myself the question, how long is this likely to last? And I thought to myself about the economic crisis, right? 2008, they said it would be a year. 10 years later, you know, I'm from the north of Ireland where we've had all sorts of troubles for all sorts of years. And, you know, we, even when peace came, it didn't change overnight. And arguably that's a really good thing. Change happens on the outside of us. Transition is what happens inside of us as humans. And it takes much longer. And so I think knowing that any massive global event honestly is going to impact us for a decade is the thing that can allow you to pivot and change how you think, innovate and embrace.
Yeah, it's a book I often reference, which is by Ryan Holiday called The Obstacle is the Way. It's like a collection of Stoic philosophy. And the title kind of tells you the story. But basically, when the thing that's going wrong is the path. Right. So if you embrace it's a 10-year problem, it's not going to happen. Okay. Well, that's ruined your business model. You've ruined your business plan. You can't run function as you are today. Okay. Well, let's lean into that and embrace it and say, well, let's just sit with it instead of running away from it or your emotions rising. And it's really, and by the way, this is something I kind of refer to quite often because things, you know, often in a business don't go the way you want them to or they're uncomfortable. But if you sort of go, okay, well, let's lean into that. What in here is the path? And often that then becomes a source of raw material from which to build the next phase of your business.
Absolutely. And I mean, we were just chatting off air about this idea of a reckoning, because my life and business and all of it just looked like a total car crash in 2020. But leaning into that reckoning and, you know, the temptation, and I wrote this in the book, the temptation was just to go to bed and stay with blankets over my head. And I thought, that's no place to live a life. And people are watching me. I need to role model this. And actually something that I didn't say was, you know, before 2020, I'd embraced these tools on an intellectual level, but I'd never really had that reckoning where, you know, the rubber hits the tar, and that's what it was for me. And what that also did was it gave me a validation that actually these do work when the shit hits the fan. These are really helpful. But also I began to talk about it and to give permission to other people to talk about it, because we don't talk about the hard stuff enough. And actually, one of my big mantras during the period, we went to companies and we ran free sessions because we were just like, we need to talk. We need to get leaders together. You need to be a mastermind. And my big message was, it's okay not to be okay. That's it. It's okay not to be okay. We're not supposed to be okay. None of us have done this before. And if we are okay, we're probably slightly delusional and I'm worried about you. It's, you know, and let's not judge ourselves for our thoughts and emotions, because we're navigating something quite massive and it's not over. We continue to navigate and there's even more shifts happening in the world and, you know, potential recession, all of the things. So we do need to lean into that and learn, okay, what did I do well last time? What would I do differently next time? How can I take those tools into the future so that I can get sharper and better at this? Because it's just going to keep on coming.
Yeah, well, I think that the change is just what's going to happen, and it's going to be more of it. And whether it's political or economic or social, technological. So the next 20, 30, 50 years, 100 years, it's going to be characterized by lots of stuff changing. So the nature of everyone's life is going to be uncertainty and shifting of change. And so for me, I'm very, live this as an entrepreneur and have had my own kind of like self-sabotaging moments, which is why the mental fitness idea for me is very important. And I would really encourage everybody to buy and read and apply Jody's book, the lessons and the learnings within it, because this isn't a thing that you just, you know, do calm app meditation once a month or whatever. It's a practice, as Jody was saying, that you can work on and should be working on, like your physical fitness, on your mental fitness. So you're ahead of the curve. So when the next big drama kicks off, whatever it is, pandemic, war, economic crash, or what have you, that we're not all freaking out and blowing ourselves up. So I'd very highly recommend the book. As we're edging towards our end, the end of the podcast time together, I like to ask my guests often, there's all this advice, and we're dishing advice out left, right, and center on this podcast today. But what advice should entrepreneurs ignore?
I'm not sure that you just need to keep like the hustle, and you just need to work hard and work hard and work hard and work hard and work hard, and then it'll all come together. I actually think one of our greatest skills is knowing when to let go. That's for leadership. It's for business. Like, there's some ideas or some things that just aren't supposed to work, or the timing isn't supposed to work, but we get tied up in the outcome. Our ego gets tied up in the outcome. This idea of sunk costs, I think, can be delusional and create bias for us. So I don't think you need to sell your soul and your sleep to be successful. I think that's a false friend. And we need to define success as well, but I don't think you're truly successful unless you actually are. Your business, it shouldn't be the means to the end. Your business should be something that you leverage for your life. So are you having the type of life that you want ultimately, and being very clear on the cost of that and what the boundaries are? So yeah, the advice I think that we should ignore is, I don't think you should be doing 70 and 80 hour weeks to be successful. I think that's false.
Yeah, well, you know, once you've burnt out and you're feeling sorry for yourself, that 70 or 80 hour week doesn't look so clever. So where should people connect with you online, Jody? Where can we find more about you?
LinkedIn is where I'm most prominent, probably. And we also have the podcast, which is everywhere that you get podcasts, and the website, so symbiapartners.com.
So symbiapartners.com, and the book is called The Hidden Edge. And so search that out, buy it, because it's brilliant. And I'm full, packed full of really, I'm a bit of a geek about stuff like this, by the way. As regular listeners will know, will be listening to all sorts of people about these kinds of thinking tools. And often the advice can be a little bit high concept or difficult to sort of grasp. But what's great about Jody's book is it's very plain English and very practical, with lots of very practical tools in there. So it breaks down some stuff which could be a little bit kind of difficult to grasp into some very actionable, plain English ways of moving forward. So definitely check it out. So thanks for coming today and sharing your lockdown woes and how you're going to battle through it. It sounds like, I mean, full of great inspiration and great great initiative and great sort of ways of battling on. So thanks for coming, and I'll see everybody next time. Do you want to get the top 5 tidbits from each episode emailed to your inbox every Friday? Yes, you do. It saves you having to go through and make notes and make a note of all the books and all the ideas that are in the podcast. We go through and we choose the top 5 we like, plus put all the links into that email. So if you just go up to honeyibluupthebusiness.com, yes, that's honeyibluupthebusiness.com, and just enter your email address. There's a little box. Just enter it in, and we will send you that information. And it saves you having to make notes and all that. That's make your life a bit easier. And of course, if you did enjoy the episode, please consider subscribing. We are trying to help people through this. So the more people that subscribe, review, rate on Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, the more people will see it and the more we can help. So help us help other people, other entrepreneurs like you. And before I go, I've got to say big up to my company, the tech department, the company we blew up and put back together again. They're generously supporting me on this mission through the podcast. So if you guys want to have a look at a company that can really help you improve your technology, make it better so your business gets better too, boosting your sales and your profit and a bit more sanity in your life, a little less stress, then head up to thetechdept.com, the tech department. My company, give us a look. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.